You're listening to Red Eye on Co-op Radio at CFRO 102.7 FM.
The casualty numbers for NATO troops in Afghanistan mount and are reported in detail. July had the highest casualty figures for foreign troops since the invasion of Afghanistan nearly 8 years ago. As for the deaths of Afghan civilians, reported only intermittently and rarely in any detail, the BBC says they have increased 25% in the first half of this year. Meanwhile, the new head of NATO praises Canada's military role and pleads for the government to extend its commitment beyond 2011. For a different perspective, we've contacted Derek O'Keefe. He recently completed editorial work on an autobiography by Malalai Joya. She is a courageous opponent both of the NATO-installed current warlord regime in her country and of the Taliban. Derek is on the phone from the interior of BC. Good morning, Derek, and welcome back to Red Eye.
Good morning, Sean. Thanks for having me on again.
Now, you just came back from Britain, where Malalai Joya launched her new book titled Raising My Voice. Working with her on the manuscript, what would you highlight about her character and role in Afghanistan?
I guess people know her story as one of being a great example of physical courage. She made her name by standing up at the post-war Loya Jirga to found a new Afghan constitution. She made her name by being both the youngest delegate and the only delegate willing to speak very directly in condemning the warlords that were present at that assembly. And since then, her life has been, in constant risk. So people know about her physical courage, but I don't think it's emphasized often enough the political courage and how unique that is in the political class, if you will, or amongst all the politicians in occupied Afghanistan. It's just, spending any amount of time with her and getting to know her, it's not a matter of that she hasn't sold out or she hasn't been quieted or she hasn't been bought off. It's that she couldn't possibly sell out. She couldn't she couldn't sit quietly or moderate her criticisms as many people have pressured her to do. There's just so much corruption to denounce, and the political courage it takes to not only make the initial speech, but continue to do this year after year, day after day, in a really horrific environment for a young progressive woman is just a very impressive thing. And it's interesting, since she's been expelled from the parliament, I don't know if all your listeners know, but in May 2007, the parliamentarians, who are in their majority warlords or drug lords or their proxies, voted to kick her out of the parliament to which she had been duly elected. And she had originally been elected from Farah province, but in the 2 years since she was kicked out and has been fighting her suspension, there have been invites and offers from people in all the different regions of Afghanistan from many different ethnic groups for her to run in their region or their province and represent them in the next election. So her appeal has really gone out across ethnic lines, and because it's so rare to have this principled voice in the political discussion in Afghanistan.
And what was the reasoning given for kicking her out of parliament?
Well, the reasoning was a parliamentary procedural law that hadn't even been fully passed itself. But essentially, they made up a law saying you can't insult your fellow parliamentarians, and this was the pretext used to expel Malalai Joya. She had, in a television interview, made an analogy between the parliament and a zoo. So they charged that she had insulted the dignity of parliament by comparing parliamentarians to zoo animals, and expelled her on that basis. This is this very same group of parliamentarians that on a number of occasions have threatened her life in the parliamentary chambers, have physically attacked her and other MPs in the parliamentary chambers, and no sanction was ever brought for those violent actions. So it was just essentially a blatant, hypocritical move to silence her voice because she wasn't, she wasn't giving in to any other threats, so they decided to just boot her out of the parliament.
Now, Malalai's book, her autobiography, has been published in Britain. What was the response of the mainstream press in Britain to this book?
I would say it was surprisingly good, given the message in the book. Her message is very hard-hitting, very direct. You know, that Afghanistan has the right to determine its own future, that it's capable of doing that, and that foreign troops are only making the situation worse, and should get out as soon as possible. So given that message so sharply, going against what the British media has been peddling for 8 years, she received a surprisingly fair hearing, even having an interview on Sky News, which is the Rupert Murdoch television, sort of the Fox News of the UK, if you will, not as extreme, but they gave her a fair interview. A number of the BBC programs, radio and television, invited her on. The print media, there was not as much coverage as there could have been, but both The Guardian and The Independent had quite prominent coverage, essentially sympathetic, or at least conveying her political message fairly. So I think it shows that there is a growing discussion through all levels of British society about the disastrous policy the British government has had in Afghanistan. In July, you mentioned NATO and Afghan civilian casualties hit a high in this just last month in July. Well, the British casualty totals were, I think, the highest they'd ever had. I think about 30 soldiers died in July from the UK. At one point, it was close to every day a new announcement. So this really was the issue last month being discussed in the UK, and in that sense, it was good timing to have Malalai's visit and to London and be able to get an opposing view across.
And while she was in Britain, did she speak at any events?
Yes, there were three main public events. The largest and I think most significant was a forum held by the UK Stop the War Coalition. Close to 300 people attended, and on the platform they had Joya, as well as a British soldier who had just, this was his first ever time publicly speaking out against the war. This was an active duty soldier who will now be facing court-martial for speaking out against the war and refusing to redeploy. His name is Joe Glendon. He spoke only briefly, but the combination of having a young Afghan and a young person from the UK both condemning a war that has affected them so personally made it a very, very powerful meeting. And I think the public that attended and the activists that attended really felt re-energized to go out and campaign against the war. And I know the British anti-war movement is now doing, or they were when I was there in July, I think it's continuing doing every Saturday, having petitioning stalls right across the country, really trying to get out to, you know, not just the major centers, but areas where there haven't been active anti-war campaigns before. So that's a similar challenge that we have here in Canada with our anti-war movement is, you know, sustained public campaigning to turn our government's policy away from the direction it's been going.
And what sense did you get of public opinion in Britain about the Afghan war?
Well, it seemed to shift a little bit, actually, over the course of July. A poll came out in early July that was close to 50-50, although there was still a plurality against the war. But by the end of July, the Independent ran a cover story with a new poll that had been commissioned that showed 53% wanted troops out, whereas only 44% wanted to keep the troops there. And I think the number was 85% of the British public felt that the war was ultimately unwinnable. They even did not want more money. Even when the question was posed in terms of spending more money to provide helicopters and more equipment to the soldiers that are there, the response was that, you know, that wouldn't make any difference. And this was very significant because the whole government's propaganda throughout the month was that the political, not necessarily the government, the opposition was really, really pushing this, the conservative opposition, that the only problem in Afghanistan was that the Brits didn't have enough helicopters, you know, the soldiers weren't well enough armed, and we just needed to put in more hardware and more weaponry, and everything would be fine. So the public was not buying that argument based on those poll results by the end of the month.
And now, NATO statements have placed great emphasis on the upcoming Afghan elections and getting a high voter turnout, claiming this would represent a defeat for the Taliban. What did you learn from Malalai Joya about Afghan popular opinion in terms of the election?
Well, her views on the election were expressed in a comment piece, actually, she wrote for The Guardian a couple of weeks ago. In the Saturday Guardian, she described this, you know, election as Karzai would likely win, but people didn't have any expectation of a positive change, even though Karzai was so hated, given who the main opponents are. And she said if there was any change, it would just be, according to the Afghan saying, the same donkey with a new saddle. So the donkey here is not so much Karzai, but the puppet regime and the occupation in general. So even if one of the two major contenders were to knock Karzai off, both of them have been vetted by the White House and the Pentagon, and both of them would end up just being the new puppet, you know, promoting the interests of the occupying forces and the, you know, extremely corrupt political class and the warlords and drug lords who are in power in Afghanistan. Two of the two major opponents, the two opponents that are given serious play in the media anyway, are Ashraf Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah, both of whom are former ministers in the Karzai government. But I did want to mention one candidate. Now, there's about 40 candidates, including all sorts of minor candidates. And there was one that Malalai Joya spoke very positively of, and this is another independent like her, parliamentarian, named Dr. Ramazan Bashardost. He's a very interesting case that unfortunately is almost never reported on in the Western media, or very rarely. Bashardost was himself a cabinet minister in the initial transition government where Karzai was appointed by the U.S. He was named one of the cabinet ministers, but he resigned due to the corruption, and specifically due to corruption associated with Western NGOs. Bashardost had presented, this is several years ago now, he had presented Karzai with a plan to kick out something like 90% of all the NGOs, foreign NGOs operating in the country, arguing that this was just going to maintain a situation of dependence, you know, and not allow for a functioning sovereign government. So needless to say, this plan to kick out the foreign NGOs and to run things by Afghans was not taken well, and Bashardost ended up resigning. And since then, he's been a fierce critic himself of the corruption and the domination of warlords in the Afghan government. So it's quite a feat that Bashardost is still alive and still running and speaking out publicly. But people like Malalai Joya and her supporters don't have any great expectation that this will be any kind of fair election, or that a candidate like Bashardost would get a fair hearing. So you know, I think it's. It's quite clear that all of the main contenders are supporters of the war, supporters of the occupation, and that shows you it's not a real democratic election, because poll after poll has showed that Afghans have turned against the occupation, and you know, if there was any kind of democratic vote coming out, coming up, at least one of the major contenders would be against the war and would be speaking out.
And beyond the immediate election, what do you think are the strategic objectives of NATO in Afghanistan?
Well, I think really the main strategic long-term objective is to be in Afghanistan in the sense of establishing permanent military bases, or of having Afghanistan as a place where U.S. and NATO forces have a permanent presence. Bagram Air Base, which is just north of Kabul, I believe just north, just outside of the capital, has long been a transfer point for victims of the U.S. torture regime, many of them going to Bagram and then ending up at Guantanamo. Well, with Guantanamo scheduled to close, the torture center there, the Bagram prison is being expanded. This will become you know, a center for international detainees, people being held in indefinite detention, which is going to continue the Obama administration. So there's a fear that Bagram Air Base will become a center for this, a new Guantanamo, as is what they're saying about Bagram in Afghanistan. So that's a big part of the reason that NATO and the U.S. Want to stay in Afghanistan, and also just the, you know, the geostrategic importance with Central Asia's oil resources and natural gas resources. Afghanistan is right there.
Can you tell us when Malalai Joya's book, Raising My Voice, will be available in Canada?
Certainly. There's a number of different editions in different countries. So the North American edition in the U.S. and Canada will actually have a different title. It's going under the title of A Woman Among Warlords, and it'll be published in mid-October this year by Scribner, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster. So that'll be out this fall, and Malalai is scheduled to do a tour of Canada November 12th to 26th.
Thanks very much for talking with us today, Derek.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
I've been speaking with Derek O'Keefe, editor of Rabble.ca, and he's also editor of Raising My Voice, Malalai Joya's new autobiography.